It began to seep through Arthas, numbing the angry, raw pain, calming his thoughts. The energy was so vast, so heady. It was more powerful even than what Arthas had known before. This, then, was why he had come. To drink deep of this icy draught. To take the cold strength of the Lich King into himself. He opened his eyes, and his vision was clear. Frostmourne's runes blazed to new life, a chill mist seeping up from it. Grinning fiercely, Arthas gripped the blade and lifted it high. When he spoke, his voice was clear and resonant and carried in the crisp, frigid air. I saw another vision of the Lich King. He has restored my powers. I know now what I must do. He pointed with Frostmourne at the doll-sized figures in the distance. Illidan has mocked the Scourge long enough. He is attempting to gain entry to the Lich King's throne chamber. He will fail. It's time we put the fear of death back in him. Time to end the game, once and for all. With a fierce, challenging cry, he swung Frostmourne over his head. It sang out hungry for more souls. For the Lich King! Arthas cried, and charged down to meet his enemies. He felt like a god as he swung Frostmourne with almost careless ease. Each soul it took only strengthened him. Let the arrows of the blood elves shower upon them like the snow. They fell like wheat before the scythe. At one point, Arthas glanced over the battlefield. Where was the one he had to slay? He saw no sign of Illidan yet. Was it possible he had already gained entrance into the— Arthas! Arthas! Turn and fight me! Damn you! The voice was clear and pure and full of hatred, and Arthas turned. The elven prince was but a few yards away, his red and gold bright as blood against the unforgiving whiteness of the snow upon which they fought. He was tall and proud, his staff planted in the snow before him, his eyes fixed on Arthas. Magic crackled around him. You will go no farther, butcher. A muscle twitched near Arthas's eye. So Sylvanas had called him too. He made a slight tisking sound and grinned at the elf who had once seemed so very powerful and learned to a young human prince. His mind went back to the moment when Kale had surprised Arthas and Jaina in a kiss. The boy that Arthas had been then had known himself outmatched by the older, much more powerful mage. Arthas was no longer a boy. After you disappeared in so cowardly a fashion at our last confrontation, I admit, I'm surprised to see you show your face again, Kale. Don't be upset that I stole Jaina from you. You should let that go and move on. After all, there's so much left in this world for you to enjoy. Oh, wait. No, there isn't. Damn you to hell, Arthas Menethil, Kael'thas snarled, trembling with outrage. You've taken everything I ever cared for. Vengeance is all I have left. He wasted no more time in venting his anger, but instead lifted the staff. The crystal affixed to its tip glowed brightly, and a ball of fire crackled in his free hand. A heartbeat later, it had soared toward Arthas. Shards of ice rained down upon the Death Knight. Kael'thas was a master mage, and much faster than anyone Arthas had ever encountered. He barely got Frostmourne up in time to deflect the surging fiery globe. The frost shards, however, were ease itself. He swung the great rune blade over his head, and it called to its blade the shards of ice, like iron shavings to a magnet. Grinning, Arthas whirled the sword over his head, directing the pieces of ice back to their sender. He'd been taken by surprise by Kael'thas's speed, but he would not make that mistake again. "You might want to think twice about attacking me with ice, Kale," he said, laughing. He needed to goad the mage into acting rashly. Control was key to the manipulation of magic, and if Kale lost his temper, he would undoubtedly lose the fight. Kale narrowed his eyes. "Thanks for the advice," he growled. Arthas tightened up on the reins, preparing to ride down his adversary. But at that instant, the snow beneath him glowed bright orange for a moment, and then became water. Invincible suddenly dropped 2 feet, and his hooves slipped on the slick ground. Arthas leaped off and sent the beast cantering away, gripping Frostmourne with renewed determination in his right hand. He extended his left. A dark ball of swirling green energy formed in his flattened palm and sped toward Kale like an arrow shot from a bow. The mage moved to counter, but the attack was too swift. His face went a shade paler, and he stumbled back, his hand going to his heart. Arthas grinned as some of the mage's life energy flooded him. "I took your woman," he said, continuing to try to anger the mage, although he knew, and probably Kale knew, that Jaina had never belonged to the elf. "I held her in my arms at night. She tasted sweet when I kissed her, Kale. She loathes you now," Kaelfas replied. "You sicken and disgust her, Arthas. Anything she felt for you has since turned to hatred." Arthas's chest contracted oddly. He realized he had not thought about how Jaina regarded him now. He had always done his best to thrust all thoughts of her away when they drifted into his mind. Was it true? Did Jaina really? An enormous, crackling ball of fire exploded against his chest, and Arthas cried out as he was forced backward by the blow. Flame licked at him for precious seconds before he recovered his wit sufficiently to counter the spell. The armor had largely protected him, although its heat against his skin was agonizing. But he was aghast that he had been so taken by surprise. A second ball of fire came, but this time he was ready, meeting the fiery blast with his own deadly ice. "I destroyed your homeland, fouled your precious Sunwell, and I killed your father. Frostmourne sucked the soul right out of him, Kale. It's gone forever." "You're good at killing noble elderly men," sneered Kaelfas. The jab was unexpectedly painful. "At least you faced my father on the battlefield. What of your own, Arthas Menethil? How brave of you to cut down a defenseless parent opening his arms to embrace his—" Arthas charged, closing the distance between them in a few strides, and brought Frostmourne down. Kaelfas parried with his staff. For a second, the stave held, then it broke beneath Frostmourne's onslaught. But the delay had bought Kale sufficient time to unsheathe a glittering, gleaming weapon, a rune blade that seemed to glow red in contrast to Frostmourne's cold, icy blue. The blades clashed. Both men pressed down, straining with effort, each one's blade holding off the other as the seconds ticked by. Kaelfas grinned as their eyes met. "You recognize this blade, do you not?" Arthas did. He knew the sword's name and its lineage. Flamestrike, Felomelorn, once wielded by Kaelfas's ancestor, Dathramar Sunstrider, the founder of the dynasty. The sword was almost unspeakably old. It had seen the War of the Ancients, the birth of the Highborn. Arthas returned the smirk. Flamestrike would have another significant event to bear witness to. It would now see the end of the last Sunstrider. "Oh, I do. I saw it snap in two beneath Frostmourne, an instant before I slew your father." Arthas was physically stronger, and the energy of the Lich King surged through him. With a ragged grunt, he shoved Kael'thas backward, thinking to knock him off balance. The mage recovered quickly and almost danced into another position, brandishing Fellow Melorn, his eyes never leaving Arthas. "And so I found it, and I had it reforged. Broken swords are weak where they are mended, elf." Arthas began to circle, watching for the instant where Kael would be vulnerable.
Kael'thas laughed.
"Human swords, perhaps, not elven. Not when they are reforged with magic and hatred and a burning need for revenge. No, Arthas. Fellow Melorn is stronger than ever, as am I, as are the Sindori. We are the stronger for having been broken, stronger and filled with purpose. And that purpose is to see you fall." The attack came suddenly. One moment Kael was standing, ranting, and the next Arthas was fighting for his very life. Frostmourne clanged against Flamestrike, and damned if the elf wasn't right. The blade held. Arthas darted back, fainted, and then brought Frostmourne across in a mighty sweep. Kael lunged out of its path, and whirled to counterattack with a violence and intensity that surprised Arthas. He was forced back, one step, then two, and then suddenly he slipped and fell. Snarling, Kael lunged in, thinking to deal the death blow. But Arthas remembered training with Muradin long ago, and the dwarf's favorite trick suddenly filled his mind. He pulled his legs in tightly and kicked Kael'thas with all his strength. The mage let out a grunt and was hurtled backward into the snow. Gasping, the Death Knight flipped to his feet, hefted Frostmourne with both hands, and plunged it down. Somehow, Flamestrike was there. The blades again strained against each other. Kael'thas's eyes burned with hatred. But Arthas was the stronger in armed combat. Stronger, with the stronger sword, despite Kael's gloating about how Fellow Melorn was reforged. Slowly, inexorably, as Arthas knew must happen, Frostmourne descended toward Kael'thas's bare throat. "She hates you," Kael whispered. Arthas cried out, fury blurring his vision for a moment, and shoved down with all his strength. Into the snow and frozen earth. Kael'thas was gone. "Coward!" Arthas cried, although he knew the prince would not hear him. The bastard had again teleported away at the last second. Fury raged in him, threatening to cloud his judgment, and he pushed it aside. He'd been foolish to let Kael'thas rile him so. "Curse you, Jaina. Even now, you haunt me." "Invincible to me," he cried, and realized his voice was shaking. Kael'thas was not dead, but he was out of the way, and that was all that mattered. He wheeled the head of his skeletal horse around and charged again toward the fray and the throne chamber of his master. He moved through the milling crowd of enemies as if they were so many insects. As they fell, he reanimated them and sent them against their fellows. The tide of the undead was unstoppable and implacable. The snow around the base of the spire was churned up and drenched with blood. Arthas looked about him at the last few knots of fighting going on. Blood elves, but no sign of their master. Where was Illidan? A flurry of quick motion caught his eye, and he turned. He growled beneath his breath. Another dreadlord. This one's back was toward him, black wings outstretched, cloven hooves melting into the snow. Arthas lifted Frostmourne. "I've defeated your kind before, dreadlord," he snarled. "Turn and face me if you dare. Or flee into the nether like the coward you demons are." The figure turned slowly. Massive horns crowned its head, its lips curved back in a smile, and over its eyes was a ragged black blindfold. Two green, glowing spots appeared where eyes should have been. "Hello, Arthas." Deep and sinister, the voice had changed, but not as much as the Kaldori's body. It was still the same pale lavender hue, etched with the same tattoos and scarifications. But the legs, the wings, the horns? Arthas immediately understood what must have happened. So that was why Illidan had become so powerful.
"You look different, Illidan. I guess the skull of Gul'dan didn't agree with you."
Illidan threw back his horned head. Dark, rich laughter rumbled from him.
"On the contrary, I have never felt better.
In a way,
I suppose I should thank you for my present state, Arthas."
"Show your appreciation by stepping out of the way, then." Arthas's voice was suddenly cold, and there was no trace of humor in it.
"The frozen throne is mine, demon. Step aside. Leave this world and never return. If you do, I'll be waiting.
We both have our masters, boy.
Mine demands the destruction of the frozen throne."
"It would seem we are at odds," Illidan replied, and lifted the weapon Arthas had fought once before. His powerful hands, with their sharp black nails, closed on the weapon's center, and he whirled it with grace and a deceptive casualness. Arthas knew a ripple of uncertainty at the display. He had just finished a fight with Kael'thas, and while he would have been the victor had not the elf, coward that he was, teleported out at the last instant, he had been taxed by the battle. There was no hint of weariness in Illidan's bearing. Illidan's smile grew as he noticed his enemy's discomfiture. He allowed himself a moment more of uncannily masterful handling of the unusual demonic weapon, then struck a position, settling in, preparing for combat.
"It must be done. Your troops are either in pieces or part of my army."
Arthas drew Frostmourne. Its runes glowed brightly, and mist curled up from its hilt. Behind the blindfold, Illidan's eyes, much brighter and more intensely green than he remembered, narrowed at the sight of the rune blade. If the demonically charged Kaldori had a powerful weapon, so too did Arthas.
"You'll end up one or the other." "Doubtful," Illidan sneered. "I am stronger than you know, and my master created yours. Come, pawn. I'll dispatch the servant before I dispatch your pathetic."
Arthas charged. Frostmourne glowed and hummed in his hands, as eager for Illidan's death as he was. The elf did not seem at all startled by the sudden rush, and with the utmost ease lifted his double-bladed weapon to parry. Frostmourne had broken ancient and powerful swords before, but this time it simply clanged and grated against the glowing green metal. Illidan gave him a smirk as he held his ground. Arthas again felt unease flicker through him. Illidan was indeed changed by absorbing the power of the skull of Gul'dan. For one thing, he was physically much stronger than he had been. Illidan chuckled, a deep and ugly sound, then shoved forcefully. It was Arthas who was forced to fall back, dropping to one knee to defend himself as the demon bore down on him.
"It is sweet to turn the tables thus," Illidan growled. "I might just kill you quickly, Death Knight, if you give me a good fight."
Arthas didn't waste breath on insults. He gritted his teeth and concentrated on batting back the blows that were being rained upon him. The weapon was a swirl of glowing green. He could feel the power of demonic energy radiating from it, just as he knew that Illidan could sense Frostmourne's grim darkness. Suddenly, Illidan was not there, and Arthas lurched forward, his momentum taking him off balance. He heard a flapping sound and whirled to see Illidan overhead, his great leathery wings creating a strong wind as he hovered out of reach. They eyed each other, Arthas catching his breath. He could see Illidan was not unaffected by the battle, either. Sweat gleamed on the massive, lavender-hued torso. Arthas settled himself, Frostmourne at the ready, for when Illidan would swoop in for a renewed assault. Then Illidan did something utterly unexpected. He laughed, shifted the weapon in his hands, and in a flurry of motion, seemingly snapped it in two. Each powerful hand now held a single blade. "Behold the twin blades of Azenoth," Illidan gloated. He flew up higher, whirling the blades in his left and right hands, and Arthas realized that he favored neither one. "Two magnificent warglaives. They can be wielded as a single devastating weapon, or, as you see, as two. It was the favored weapon of a Doomguard, a powerful demon captain whom I slew 10,000 years ago. How long have you fought with your pretty blade, human? How well do you know it?" The words were intended to unsettle the Death Knight. Instead, they invigorated him. Illidan might have had this admittedly powerful weapon for longer, but Frostmourne was bound to Arthas, and he to it. It was not a sword as much as an extension of himself. He had known it when he first had the vision of it, when he had just arrived in Northrend. He had been certain of the connection when he laid eyes upon it waiting for him. And now he felt it surge in his hand, confirming their unity. The demon blades gleamed. Illidan dropped down on Arthas like a stone. Arthas cried out and countered, more certain of this blow than of any he had dealt with the rune blade before, swinging Frostmourne up underneath the descending demon. And as he knew must happen, he felt the sword bite deep into flesh. He pulled, drawing the gash across Illidan's torso, and felt a deep satisfaction as the former Kaldori screamed in agony. And yet the bastard would not fall. Illidan's wings beat erratically, still somehow keeping him aloft. And then, before Arthas's shocked gaze, his body seemed to shift and darken, almost as if it was made of writhing black, purple, and green smoke. "This is what you have given me," Illidan cried. His voice, bass to begin with, had somehow grown even deeper. Arthas felt it shiver along his bones. The demon's eyes glowed fiercely in the swirling darkness that was his face. "This gift, this power, and it will destroy you." A scream was torn from Arthas's throat, and he fell again to his knees. Blazing green fire chased itself along his armor, seared his flesh, even dulled Frostborn's blue glow for a moment. Over the raw cry of his own torment, he heard Illidan laughing. Again the fell fire cascaded over him, and Arthas fell forward, gasping. But as the fire faded, and he saw Illidan swooping in for the kill, he felt the ancient rune blade he still managed to grasp urge him to rally. Frostmourne was his, and he its, and so united, they were invincible. Just as Illidan lifted his blades for the kill, Arthas raised Frostmourne, thrusting upward with all his strength. He felt the blade connect, pierce flesh, strike. Illidan fell hard to the ground. Blood gushed from his bare torso, melting the snow around it with a slow, hissing sound. His chest rose and fell in gasps.
His vaunted twin blades were of no use now. One had been knocked from his grasp. The other lay in a hand that could not even curl around its hilt. Arthas got to his feet, his body still tingling with the remnants of the fell fire Illidan had hurled at him. He stared at him for a long moment, branding the sight into his mind. He thought about dealing the killing blow, but decided to let the merciless cold of the place do it for him. A greater need burned in him now, and he turned, lifting his eyes to the spire that towered above him. He swallowed hard and simply stood for a moment, knowing, without knowing how he knew it, that something was about to fundamentally change. Then he took a deep breath and entered the cavern. Arthas moved almost as if in a daze, down the lengths of twining tunnels that led ever deeper into the bowels of the earth. His feet seemed guided, and while there was no noise, certainly no one to challenge his right to be here, he felt, rather than heard, a deep thrum of power. He continued to descend, feeling that call of power drawing him ever closer to his destiny. Up ahead was a cold, blue-white light. Arthas moved toward it, almost breaking into a run, and the tunnel opened up into what Arthas could only think of as a throne chamber. For just ahead was a structure that made Arthas's breath catch in his throat. The Lich King's prison sat atop of this twining tower, this spire of blue-green, shimmering ice that was not ice, that rose up as if to pierce the very roof of the cavern. A narrow walkway wound, serpentine, about the spire, leading him upward. Still filled with the energy granted to him by the Lich King, Arthas did not tire, but unwelcome memories seemed to dart at him like flies as he ascended, putting one booted foot in front of the other. Words, phrases, images came back to him. "Remember, Arthas, we are paladins. Vengeance cannot be a part of what we must do. If we allow our passions to turn to bloodlust, then we will become as vile as the orcs."
"Jaina. Oh, Jaina. No one can seem to deny you anything, least of all me."
"Don't deny me, Jaina. Don't ever deny me. Please."
"I never would, Arthas. Never." He kept going, relentlessly moving upward.
"We know so little. We can't just slaughter them like animals out of our own fear."
"This is bad business, lad. Leave it be. Let it stay here, lost and forgotten. We'll find another way to save your people. Let's leave now. Go back and find that way."
One foot followed the other, upward, ever upward. An image of black wings brushed his memory.
"I will leave you one final prediction. Just remember, the harder you strive to slay your enemies, the faster you'll deliver your people into their hands."
Even as these memories tugged at him, clutched at his heart, there was one image, one voice, that was stronger and more compelling than all the others, whispering, encouraging him, "Closer you draw, my champion. My moment of freedom comes, and with it, your ascension to true power." Upward he climbed, his gaze ever on the peak, on the huge chunk of deep blue ice that imprisoned the one who had first set Arthas's feet on this path. Closer it drew, until Arthas came to a halt a few feet away. For a long moment, he regarded the figure trapped within, imperfectly glimpsed. Mist rolled off the huge chunk of ice, further obscuring the image. Frostmourne glowed in his hand. From deep inside, Arthas saw the barest hint of an answering flare of 2 points of glowing blue light.
"Return the blade,"
came the deep, rasping voice in Arthas's mind, almost unbearably loud. Complete the circle. Release me from this prison. Arthas took a step forward, then another, lifting Frostborn as he moved until he was running. This was the moment it had all been leading to. And without realizing it, a roar built in his throat and tore free as he swung the blade down with all of his strength. A massive cracking resounded through the chamber as Frostmourne slammed down. The ice shattered, huge chunks flying in every direction. Arthas lifted his arms to shield himself, but the shards flew past him harmlessly. Pieces fell from the imprisoned body, and the Lich King cried out, lifting his armored arms to the sky. More groaning, crackling sounds came from the cavern, and from the being himself, so loud that Arthas winced and covered his ears. It was as if the very world was tearing itself apart. Suddenly, the armored figure that was the Lich King seemed to shatter as his prison did, falling apart before Arthas's stunned gaze. There was nothing, no one, inside. Only the armor, icy black, clattering to lie in pieces. The helm, empty of its owner's head, slid to a halt to lie at Arthas's feet. He stared down at it for a long moment, a deep shiver passing through him. All this time, he had been chasing a ghost. Had the Lich King ever really been here? If not, who had thrust Frostmourne from the ice? Who had demanded to be freed? Was he, Arthas Menethil, supposed to have been the one encased in the frozen throne all along? Had this ghost he'd been chasing been himself? Questions that would likely never have answers. But one thing was clear to him. As Frostmourne had been for him, so was the armor. Gauntleted fingers closed over the spiked helm, and he lifted it slowly, reverently, and then, closing his eyes, he lowered it onto his white head. He was suddenly galvanized, his body tensing as he felt the essence of the Lich King enter him. It pierced his heart, stopped his breath, shivered along his veins, icy, powerful, crashing through him like a tidal wave. His eyes were closed, but he saw so much. All that Ner'zhul, the orc shaman, had known. All he had seen, had done. For a moment, Arthas feared he would be overwhelmed by it all, that in the end, the Lich King had tricked him into coming here, so that he could place his essence in a fresh new body. He braced himself for a battle for control, with his body as the prize. But there was no struggle. Only a blending, a melding. All around him, the cavern continued to collapse. Arthas was only barely aware of it. His eyes darted rapidly back and forth beneath his closed lids. His lips moved. He spoke. They spoke. Now we are one. Epilogue. The Lich King. The blue and white world blurred in Arthas's dream vision. The cold, pure colors shifted, changed to the warm hues of wood and fire and torchlight. He had done as he had said he would. He had remembered his life, all that had gone before, had again walked the path that had taken him to the seat of the frozen throne, and this deep, deep, dreaming state. But the dream was not over, it would seem. He again sat at the head of the long, beautifully carved table that took up most of this illusionary great hall. And the two,
who had such an interest in his dream, were still there, watching him. The orc on his left, elderly but still powerful, searched his face, and then began to smile, the gesture stretching the image of a white skull painted on his face. And on his right, the boy, the emaciated, sickly boy, looked even worse than Arthas remembered him looking when he had entered the dream of remembrance. The boy licked cracked pale lips and drew breath as if to speak. But it was the orc whose words shattered the stillness first. "There is so much more," he promised. Images crowded Arthas's mind, interweaving and lying atop one another into glimpses of the future and past entangled. An army of humans on horseback, carrying the flag of Stormwind, fighting alongside, not against, a horde raiding party mounted atop snarling wolves. They were allies, attacking the Scourge together. The scene shifted, changed. Now the humans and orcs were attacking one another, and the undead, some crying out orders and fighting with minds that were clearly their own, were standing shoulder to shoulder with the orcs, strange-looking bullmen and trolls. Quel'Thalas? Undamaged? No, no, there was the scar he and his army had left, but the city was being rebuilt. Faster now the images poured into his mind, dizzying, chaotic, disordered. It was impossible to tell the past from the future now. Another image, that of skeletal dragons raining destruction down on a city Arthas had never seen before, a hot, dry place crowded with orcs. And, yes, it was Stormwind itself that was now coming under attack from the undead dragons. Nerubians. No, not Nerubians, not Anubarak's people, but kin to them, yes. A desert race, these were. Their servants were mammoth creatures with the heads of dogs, golems made of obsidian, who strode across the shining yellow sands. A symbol appeared, one Arthas knew, the L of Lordaeron, impaled by a sword, but depicted in red, not blue. The symbol changed, became a red flame on a white background. The flame seemed to spark to a life of its own, and engulfed the background, burning it away, to reveal the silvery waters of a vast expanse of water, a sea. Something was roiling just beneath the ocean's surface. The hitherto smooth surface began to churn wildly, seething, as if from a storm, although the day was clear. A horrible sound that Arthas only dimly recognized as laughter assaulted his ears, along with the screaming of a world wrenched from its proper place, hauled upward to face the light of day it had not seen in uncounted centuries. Green, all was green, shadowy and nightmarish, grotesque images dancing at the corner of Arthas's mind, only to dart away before they could be firmly grasped. There is a brief glimpse, gone now. Antlers? A deer? A man? It was hard to tell. Hope hung about the figure, but there were forces bent on destroying it. The mountains themselves came to life, taking giant strides, crushing everything luckless enough to cross their paths. With each mammoth footfall, the world seemed to tremble and shake. Frostmourne. This, at least, he knew, and intimately. The sword whirled end over end, as if Arthas had tossed it into the air. A second sword rose to meet it. Long, inelegant but powerful, with the symbol of a skull embedded in its fearsome blade. A name, Ashbringer. A sword and yet more than a sword, as was Frostmourne. The two clashed. Arthas blinked and shook his head. The visions tumbled, chaotic, heartening, and disturbing, were gone. The orc chuckled, the painted skull on his face stretching with the gesture. He had once been named Ner'zhul, had once had the gift of true visioning. Arthas did not doubt that all he had seen, though imperfectly understood, would indeed come to pass.
"So much more," the orc repeated, "but only if you continue to walk this path fully."
Slowly the Death Knight turned his white head to the boy. The ill child met him with a gaze that was astonishingly clear, and for a moment Arthas felt something inside him stir. Despite everything, the boy would not die. And that meant... The boy smiled a little, and some of the sickness dissipated as Arthas struggled for words.
"You are me. You are both me. But you..."
His voice was soft, tinged with wonder and disbelief. "You are the little flame that burns inside me still, that resists the ice. You are the last vestiges of humanity, of compassion, of my ability to love, to grieve, to care. You are my love for Jaina, my love for my father, for all the things that made me what I once was. Somehow Frostmourne didn't take it all. I tried to turn away from you, and I couldn't. I can't."
The boy's sea-green eyes brightened, and he gave his other self a tremulous smile. His color improved, and before Arthas's eyes, some of the pustules on his skin disappeared.
"You understand now. Despite all, Arthas, you have not abandoned me."
Tears of hope stood in those eyes, and his voice, though stronger now than it had been, quavered with emotion.
"There must be a reason. Arthas Menethil, much harm have you done, but there is goodness in you yet. If there was none, I would not exist, not even in your dreams."
He slipped off the chair and slowly walked toward the Death Knight. Arthas stood as he approached. For a moment, they regarded each other, the child, and the man he had become. The boy extended his arms, as if he were a living, breathing child asking to be picked up and held by a loving father.
"It doesn't have to be too late," he said quietly.
"No," Arthas said quietly, staring raptly at the boy. "It doesn't."
He touched the curve of the boy's cheek, slipped a hand beneath the small chin, and tilted up the shining face. He smiled into his own eyes.
"But it is." Frostmourne descended. The boy cried out, his shocked, betrayed, anguished cry, that of the wind raging outside. And for a moment Arthas saw him standing there, the blade buried in his chest, almost as big as he was, and felt one final tremor of remorse as he met his own eyes. Then the boy was gone. All that remained of him was the bitter keening of the wind scouring the tormented land. It felt marvelous. It was only with the boy's passing that Arthas truly realized how dreadful a burden this last struggling scrap of humanity had been. He felt light, powerful, purged, scoured clean as Azeroth would soon be. All his weakness, his softness, everything that had ever made him hesitate or second-guess himself, it was all gone now. There was only Arthas, Frostmourne, all but singing at having claimed the final piece of Arthas's soul, and the orc, whose skull face was split with triumphant laughter.
"Yes!" the orc exhilarated, laughing almost maniacally. "I knew you would make this choice. For so long you have wrestled with the last dregs of goodness, of humanity in you, but no longer. The boy held you back, and now you are free."
He now got to his feet, his body still that of an old orc, but moving with the ease and fluidity of the young.
"We are one, Arthas. Together, we are the Lich King. No more Ner'zhul, no more Arthas. Only this one glorious being. With my knowledge, we can—"
His eyes bulged as the sword impaled him. Arthas stepped forward, plunging the glittering, hungering Frostmourne ever deeper into the dream being that had once been Ner'zhul, then the Lich King, and was soon to be nothing, nothing at all. He slipped his other arm around the body, pressing his lips so close to the green ear that the gesture was almost intimate as the act of taking a life always was, and always would be. "No," Arthas whispered, "no, we. No one tells me what to do. I've got everything I need from you. Now the power is mine and mine alone. Now there is only I. I am the Lich King, and I am ready." The orc shuddered in his arms, stunned by the betrayal, and vanished. The teacup shattered as it fell from Jaina's suddenly nerveless hands. She gasped, momentarily unable to breathe, the cold of the damp, gray day knifing through her. Aegwynn was there, her gnarled hands closing on Jaina's.
"Aegwynn, what happened?"
Her voice was thick, anguished, and tears suddenly filled her eyes, as if she was grieving terribly for the loss of something.
"It's not your imagination," Aegwynn said grimly. "I felt it too. As for what, well, I'm sure we'll find out."
Sylvanas started, as if the mammoth demon in front of her had struck her. Which, of course, he would never dare do. Varimathras narrowed his glowing eyes.
"My lady, what is it?"
"Him. It was always him."
Sylvanas' gloved hands clenched and unclenched.
"Something has happened. Something to do with the Lich King. I felt it."
There was no longer a link between them, at least not one in which she was under his control. But perhaps something lingered, something that warned her.
"We need to step up our plans," she told Varimathras.
"I believe that time has suddenly become a precious commodity."
For so long he had felt nothing. He had stayed on the throne, immobile, waiting, dreaming. The ice had come to cover him, as he sat still as stone, but not a prison, no, a second skin. He had not known then what he was waiting for, but now he did. He had taken the final steps on a journey begun so long ago, begun the day that darkness had first brushed his world, in the form of a weeping, young Stormwind prince mourning his father. The path had led across Azeroth to Northrend, to this frozen throne and open sky, to the searching of his deepest self, and the choices to murder both the innocent that held him back and the parts of himself that had shaped him. Arthas, the Lich King, alone in his glory and power, slowly opened his eyes. Ice cracked from them at the gesture and fell in small shards like frozen tears. A smile formed beneath the ornate helm that covered his white hair and pale skin, and more ice fell from his awakening, slowly shifting form, fragments of an icy chrysalis that was no longer needed. He was awake. It's begun.
About the author. Award-winning author Christy Golden has written over 30 novels and several short stories in the fields of science fiction, fantasy, and horror. Golden launched the T.S.R. Ravenloft line in 1991 with her first novel, the highly successful Vampire of the Mists, which introduced elven vampire Jander Sunstar. To the best of her knowledge, she is the creator of the elven vampire archetype in fantasy fiction. She is the author of several original fantasy novels, including On Fire's Wings, In Stone's Clasp, and Under Sea's Shadow, currently available only as an ebook. The first three in her multi-book fantasy series, The Final Dance, from Luna Books. In Stone's Clasp won the Colorado Authors League Award for Best Genre Novel of 2005, the second of Golden's novels to win the award. Among Golden's other projects are over a dozen Star Trek novels and the well-received StarCraft Dark Templar trilogy, Firstborn, Shadowhunters, and the forthcoming Twilight. An avid player of Blizzard's MMORPG World of Warcraft, Golden has written several novels in that world, Lord of the Clans, Rise of the Horde, with three more in the works. She has also written two Warcraft manga stories for Tokyo Pop, I Got What You'll Need, and A Warrior Maid. Golden is currently hard at work on three books in the major nine-book Star Wars series, Fate of the Jedi, in collaboration with Aaron Alston and Troy Denning. Her first book in the series, Omen, is slated for publication in July of 2009. Golden lives in Colorado with her husband and two cats. She welcomes visitors to her website, www.christygolden.com. This is Christy Golden. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Arthas, Rise of the Lich King, by Christy Golden. This program was produced by Dion Audio Services. Executive producer, Byron Parnell. Text copyright 2009 by Blizzard Entertainment, Inc. Production copyright 2018 by Blizzard Entertainment, Inc. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.